Donald?
Yes, it is.
Donald, this is Kyle.
Hi, Kyle. How are you?
I'm great. I'm
terrific. Well, welcome to the Broadway Radio Show.
Thank you.
We are already recording. We're going to talk about your brand new CD release, which is Richard Rodgers Reimagined. But first, I want to kind of go back and give our listeners a little bit of background about you. I know you were born in Saskatchewan. And how did you make the, let's fill in the time span between Saskatchewan and New York?
Yeah. it's a wild, weird journey. And basically, I started when I was really young, like 12 years old, as a blues guitar player in Saskatchewan. And that was what I was sort of known for. And I eventually started writing my own music and got a record deal when I was 15, 16 years old. I got my driver's license and a record deal like almost on the same day. And it was with Columbia Records in New York City. And that began a journey of traveling the world as a singer-songwriter. And I opened for many different artists. It was a combination of like opening for great blues artists like B.B. King and Buddy Guy and James Brown before he passed away, and pop artists like Maroon 5 who were just starting out, and John Mayer and Jason Mraz. And so I had these sort of 3 years where I had the best seat in the house every night, just learning and watching these guys play and performing before them. And so I sort of felt like that was going to be my life, just being a rock and roll musician. Aww. And that I would be making albums and touring and trying to get on the radio and all that stuff. And then the music industry sort of collapsed, as we know, and it became increasingly unclear how you could sustain yourself as a musician. And I was only 20 at this point, but already I was feeling a little bit lost in music. I wasn't sure what was going to happen next. And I got a call from an agent in New York City who said, you know, I'm not sure if you've heard of this show called Spring Awakening, but it's a Broadway show, and I think you should come down and see it, because the lead, Jonathan Groff, is leaving soon, and they're trying to replace him, and you might be right. And I knew nothing about Broadway, like so beyond nothing. In fact, I didn't even really know what Broadway was. Like when I heard Broadway, I thought of Broadway Avenue in Saskatoon. And but I went down there and I took a friend to the show, and we sat there, and I kind of had a preconceived idea of what a show like this might sound like. And then the curtain came up and the show began, and I was blown away. I just was sort of like, oh, you can do this kind of music on a Broadway stage. It doesn't have to sound like sort of classic show tunes. This is like music that I grew up with, and because it's Duncan Sheik writing it. And so anyways, I really liked it, and I auditioned for it, and I was totally naive in that process too. I brought my guitar to the audition. I played an original song. It was like I did everything wrong. and I got the part. And so that sort of suddenly opened me up to this entirely new world of musical theater. And that was that. And then sort of it just sort of created a new path for me.
Right. And it's been a great opportunity for you to combine your love of being a musician and a singer. But also opening you up to a whole history and catalog of music that you yourself can now put your own spin on. You can put your own mark on it.
You're so right. You know, one of there are limiting aspects to growing up listening to blues music and rock music, because you don't think about the standards, you know, so much. And you know, it's weird. It's like there are these little pockets of clubs almost that I find are sometimes a little bit too exclusive. I find that, like, you know, people who consider themselves, you know, listeners of rock music, they discount musical theory. Theater and the classic songbook. And then it goes both ways, too. I find that people who are really into musical theater sometimes discount, you know, pop music. And I just never got that. I like everything. If something's good, I like it. Mm-hmm. And but I wasn't exposed to Richard Rodgers growing up at all, or Burt Bacharach, for that matter. And getting into this world, I realized, oh, my God, there's such craft here. There's such beautiful pieces here. Not only that, but the audiences are captive, you know? It sounds so simple now, but, you know, when you're in the music world, you're used to audiences who are chattering away and just whatever. But in theater, it's like looking at a painting. And I found that really inspiring. So you're right. It's kind of like just being open to a new world can generate a lot of inspiration.
So let's talk a little bit about, before we get to the new CD, I want to talk a little bit about Close to You, the Bacharach Reimagined show. Because that's kind of what, I mean, I know you did Spring Awakening, but then you kind of came into your own theater identity with that particular show. So tell us a little bit of history about the show, because I have to tell you, the cast recording, I love the cast recording. The London cast recording is terrific.
Oh, thank you.
And I highly have recommended it to a lot of people, because it not only shows you how you can take a classic pop catalog and turn it into a musical theater piece with a great cast of talented theater performers and really make this work. So talk a little bit about the history of that show, because I know that ultimately is what led to the Richard Rodgers CD. So
yeah.
We'll start with Burt Bacharach.
Sure. Well, firstly, you know, being in Spring Awakening and then here on Broadway, I enjoyed doing that so much, but I knew in the back of my mind that what I would really like to do is create one of these pieces, you know. And so I always was on the lookout for an opportunity to create a piece of theater, which as you know is a lot harder than it sounds, and a lot more time consuming than you originally think. So I just was sort of always look out, and I one day very randomly was asked to go into the studio in Los Angeles, a recording studio, and sing for Burt Bacharach to be his singer, as he was working on some new demos for music that he was writing. I mean, he's in his 80s and he still writes music every day. Mm-hmm. And so I think he had seen me in Spring Awakening, and I got hired for that, and it was really random, and I just figured, like, you know, I've done this kind of stuff a little bit before, so I'll go in, I'll see him for an hour, I'll sing my piece, I'll get my check, and then I'll be out of there. It was that kind of thing. But when I got there, it was like, it was such a magical experience, not to be hyperbolic, but it was just one of the great moments in, you know, as a musician, you only get a few of these, like, spine-tingling moments, and this was one of them, because it was literally just a room with a piano and Burt sitting at that piano and a microphone next to it, and, you know, there was no backing track, there was no click track or metronome, it was just us playing and singing together. And so I had, like, you know, not only a front row seat, but like a view of his fingers as he was playing piano and breathing with the music and everything. And so I just was so deeply inspired by being with Burt that I said to myself, I gotta figure out a way to milk this. I have to find a way to spend more time with this guy. It's just too good. And I invited my manager to one of those sessions, and he said to Burt, you know, wouldn't it be great to hear Kyle not only sing these new songs of yours, but maybe go back and look at the entire catalog? And Burt was kind of like, yeah, that'd be cool, man. He was very receptive immediately. And so I just took him up on it. I went home, and I started really studying Burt's entire catalog and coming up with sort of a new way to present it to people and a new way to play it. And I would create these arrangements, usually like about 15 minutes at a time, and then I would drive it over to Burt's house and play him these arrangements for his approval, which was, you know, an incredibly nerve-wracking experience. And amazingly, he gave it. He really got it immediately. He was cool with the fact that it was a stripped down sort of guitar based version of his stuff. And from there we knew we had something, and we developed a theater piece out of it. We found Stephen Hoggett, who's an amazing choreographer, and we made him director of the piece, and we just started developing it over time.
What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? What's it all about when you sort it out, Alfie? Are we meant to take more than we give? Or are we meant to be kind? And if only fools are kind, Alfie, then I guess it is wise to be cruel. And if life belongs only to the strong, Alfie, what will you lend on an old golden rule? As sure as I believe there's a heaven above, Alfie, I know there's something much more, something even non-believers can believe. I believe in love, Alfie. Without true love, we just exist, Alfie. Until you find the love you've missed, you're nothing, let your heart lead the way, and you'll find love any day.
Played in New York, off Broadway, and then
yes.
Moved to London.
Exactly.
And yeah. That's where we have a cast recording, because we have a cast recording from the London production.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you were probably really overwhelmed with the reception in New York, because the reception in New York was so terrific. But it must have been an interesting experience to suddenly find yourself over in London doing this kind of show when, like you said, you weren't even a theater person to begin with, and
yeah.
now you're performing, and not only are you performing a great catalog of songs, you have Burt Bacharach's stamp of approval. You have, I mean, he even does the intro at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and also he would come to the openings of the show, and which was so amazing, and just seeing him sort of stand up in the audience and get that. Standing ovation, and at the opening for the West End production, Burt came, and he was sitting right next to Tom Jones.
Uh-huh.
And so if you ever want to like get as nervous as you possibly can be, sing What's New Pussycat to Tom That's right. So that was a really crazy experience.
What's new, Pussycat? What's new, Pussycat? I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and powder your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat nose. So thrilling, and I'm so willing to care for you. So go and make up your cute little pussycat eyes. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat eyes. Come on. Pussycat, you're delicious, and if my wishes could all come true, soon I'll be kissing your cute little pussycat lips. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do, 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 do. You and your pussycat.
Great songwriting is great songwriting, and
exactly.
And it will. That's why they become standards. And it's so nice to see, you know, a new generation or a younger generation going back and looking and recognizing the craft and how important these songs are, and bringing them to a new audience and reinterpreting them for a new audience and showing that the reason they are classics or standards is. They do stand the test of time, and they can be done in a variety of different ways, and they still get the message across. The sentiments of the song are still there, and they're still true.
That's so right. It's like it's an incredibly well-built house, and you can decorate it in any way you want, and it'll still be standing because it's just so well-built. You know, it's true of Bacharach's work, and it's true of Richard Rogers' work. That's where the similarities are.
Chair is still a chair, even when there's no one sitting there. But a chair is not a house, and a house is not a home when there's no one there to hold you tight, and no one there you can kiss goodnight. A room is still a room, even when there's nothing there but gloom. A house is not a home when the two of us are far apart, and one of us has a broken heart. Now and then I call your name, and suddenly your face appears, but it's just a crazy game. When it ends in tears. Darling, have a heart. Mistake, keep us apart. 'Cause I'm not meant to live alone. Turn this house into a home when I climb the stairs and turn the key. Well, please be there still. In love with me. La 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 la.
Then how did the Richard Rogers thing come about? I mean, I kind of sort of know the story, but tell it to us.
Yeah. So, during, you know, those trips to Bert's house where I was bringing him music and playing it for him, I was always sort of blown away by the memorabilia in his place. You know, you can't help but sort of be wide-eyed and look at every shelf and see what's on there, and there are Oscars on the mantelpiece and Grammys lying all over the place. And one thing that really stuck out to me was this little letter that was really beautifully framed and prominently put up on the wall. And it was just like, it looked like a piece of paper that was just typewritten on a typewriter a long time ago. And I leaned in to look at it one day, and I saw that it was a letter to Bert from Richard Rogers. And it was basically a fan letter that he wrote in, I think, the mid-60s, it might have been the very early 70s, mm-hmm. Where he basically said to Bert, listen, I want you to know I love what you're doing so much, and in fact, I consider you the future of music. You know, your craftsmanship is amazing. Keep doing what you're doing. And I just thought that was incredible, first of all, that Richard Rogers felt that way about Bert, that he saw so much in him, and second of all, that it meant so much to Bert that he framed it and put it on his wall, you know, like a proud son, you know, getting praise from his father, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so I dug in a little deeper, and I realized that it went both ways. There are many, you can find old interviews of Bert where he references Richard Rodgers as a key influence in his writing. And so I just sort of stored that in the old noggin, and I said, like, okay, when I have time, maybe this is just too good to pass up. I should look into Richard Rodgers' music and soak that up the way that I did Burke's, and maybe some other project will come of that. So this last year was that time, and it turned into this album.
She's a fool, and don't I know it? But a fool can have her charms. I'm in love, and don't I show it? Like a babe in arms. Same old sad sensation. Lately I've not slept a wink since this half pint imitation put me on the blink. Beguiled again, a simpering, whimpering child again, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered. Am I? When love came and told me I shouldn't sleep, bewitched, bothered, and bewildered, am I? Lost my heart, but what of it?
An immense catalog. You have to remember, and I know most of our listeners are musical theater people, so of course they know Richard Rodgers is probably the preeminent musical theater composer of the 20th century. His partnership with Hart, and then his partnership with Hammerstein, as well as his work with other lyricists, is just amazing. The styles range so much from the stuff he wrote in the 20s and 30s to the 40s
incredible.
And 50s, and standards everywhere.
Yeah,
with his
I know.
Stuff. So I can't imagine. I mean, that's a pretty overwhelming catalog for you to suddenly jump into.
It is. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I did when I was preparing for this and sort of studying was read some biographies on Richard Rodgers, and as you're reading through it, you're like, I had this strange feeling of almost jealousy of him, because it was like, I can't believe he did that and that and that and that and all the writing, and each time he sat down at the piano, it seemed like he wrote a timeless song, you know. So yeah, it is daunting, and it's overwhelming, but I didn't really think of it that way. I just sort of sat down with a lot of the music, and my manager and friend David Seltzer, who I worked with on the Bacharach piece too. So the way that we come at this is that I grew up not with this music. I grew up with Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix and Paul Simon. He grew up with this music. He's like you just said of yourself and your listeners, he really knows the entire catalog. So I'm very honest about the fact that I didn't grow up with it. It's just, you know, for no reason. It's just what happened. And so we sat down, and he sort of talked me through his experience with the music and the songs that he really, really thinks are at the core of what Richard Rodgers did. And then I take that in and sort of make notes, and then I go home and I listen to, you know, a lot of the music and taking into account what he said, but then I think about, okay, which of these songs is really striking a chord with me personally, and then it just kind of becomes obvious which songs I can hear myself doing and which songs I don't, you know.
Well, and you have a really good mix too, because the collection of songs is kind of covers a really good a good scope of the Richard Rodgers canon, because you do have Hammerstein stuff, you have Rodgers and Hart stuff, and you have, and there's a lot of standards people are going to know, but things like My Funny Valentine and My Favorite Things, and there's all sorts of a good collection of Richard Rodgers stuff. I think what's interesting is what you've done is, as you said, you looked at the catalog and found the stuff that you felt that you could interpret. Mm-hmm. As a singer and also as an arranger, because you're doing all the arrangements for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's obviously, but did you find that there was some sort of consistent thematic thing that you were seeing in terms of what types of messages in the songs were attracting to you?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, for me, I think I probably gravitated towards the Lorenz Hart material.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's because it's a younger man's writing, and you can feel that. You know, you can feel the hunger in those songs and the irreverence at times, and this, you know, and there's some anger in those songs a little bit, and there's a lot of sadness too. And you know, looking at the biography, that helped me understand that.
Right. If you read the biography, any biography of Lorenz Hart, it really opens your eyes to what goes into his lyrics. Really does.
Yes. Absolutely. So that was really interesting to me.
Blue. You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. You heard me say it. for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please hold me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold, blue moon. Now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
And I think in general, I find that, like, and I found this with Bacharach's catalog too, much of these songs have, many of these songs have incredibly, they have darkness to them, mm-hmm. but because of the time that they came out, the tone of music that people were responding to was not a dark tone. So you have these dark lyrics that are couched in really happy, you know, major chords and sometimes upbeat, you know, beautiful pieces. But the way that we would look at those lyrics now, if we were to write them, we would play them in sort of like, this is a bad word, but like an emo mm-hmm. sort of, we would embrace the darkness, right? Like, because right. acoustic guitars have a darkness to them and electric guitars, and we like that now with, you know, like whether it's Morrissey or The Cure or whatever, it's just coming to mind. But so I think one of my things that I like to do is give those lyrics a chance to breathe and a chance to embrace their own darkness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not that I'm a dark person or anything, or that you listen to this album and you think that way, but it's just a little bit more sort of, you know, like, for example, My Favorite Things, you know, we all know and love that song, and it makes us think of Julie Andrews singing and all those little details that she talks about, and it's happy and it's silly, and we think about Christmas when we think. But then the final line of the song is, then I don't feel so bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, forget the show for a second, just the song as a standalone song. That line to me, it is so, there's so much depth to that. You know, then I don't feel so bad, because that means that everything she said before is all said because she feels bad, you know?
Right.
And what if we focused on that line a little bit more, just put the gas on that just a little bit more? And so that's what I tried to do there, and it turned into sort of, you know, a little bit more of a melancholy piece.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorites. girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad, so bad, so bad, so
putting this together that I need to do a show of this. I mean, I know you've been doing, you know, CD launch concerts in New York and Los Angeles, but you know, having put together, you know, the Burt Bacharach show, were you thinking, oh gee, maybe I should follow up with a Richard Rodgers stage show?
Well, you know, it's interesting, we're just starting to talk about that now. Really, what we wanted to try this time was we wanted to flip it. In other words, we did the show of Bacharach first, and we went through that whole process, which was like, you know, a good 5 years of my life.
Right.
And then we made the album, because that's just the way it worked out. And it was, you know, a very theatrical experience, which was amazing. This time, I felt like it would be fun to get the music out there first and see how that sticks with people, and play a few concerts like we're doing right now, and then we'll see. I mean, it's been really, really fun to play these last couple weeks, and you never know. We're going to start sitting down and talking about that now.
That's great. And like I said, the CD has, what does it have, 12, 13 tracks? I can't count here. And that obviously opens it up to including a lot more of the catalog. You have obviously a lot more songs to play with if you're doing a full show. But I would also imagine the tricky part now is, you know, whether you decide to do a stage show or not. The tricky part now is, now that you have opened up your world to the whole, you know, American Songbook, the musical theater standards, those kinds of things. You know, there, I would imagine that there's a sense in you of, gee, what other, you know, songwriters and stuff can I start exploring and doing reimagined CDs of, or concerts of, or whatever. But at the same time, you also don't want to get trapped in
that.
You sort of become, oh, he's that artist who does, you know, reimaginings of standards, because you still want to have Kyle. I mean, you still want to be Kyle, the singer, performer, person. So there's, do you understand what I'm saying? It's sort of like
you kind of
can get trapped here.
Yeah, no, you're so right, and you're just expressing some of my deepest anxieties. But it's, you know what it is? I used to think that way a lot, and I used to try to sort of control it. And mm-hmm. and I used to think, like, okay, I'm going to accomplish this, and then I'm going to accomplish that, and then people are going to like this. But, you know, but what I've realized, especially now in sort of the modern landscape of show business, is that the best thing to do is to be flexible.
Right.
And, you know, for example, I had no idea that Bacharach would even be a part of my life at all, let alone this huge life-changing part of my life. I had no idea that that would lead me to Richard Rodgers. It's all sort of, not to sound I don't know what, but it's all a journey that has like a really windy road to it. It's not straightforward. So I've resigned myself to the fact that I have no idea how I'm going to be perceived this year, next year, 10 years from now. And the way to combat that is just to do the best work you can in the moment, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. You know, it's really hard to say. If there was an amazing musical that came out that I was perfect for, because I'm not perfect for many musicals, but if there was, I would love to do someone else's work on Broadway again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have no idea, but I'm a lot less concerned about the outcome now, because I've realized that you can't control it.
Right. Sometimes the best career plan is to have no career plan.
I think so. To a degree, I think you're right. Yeah.
You know, it's just,
you're really right.
You have to just take it one step at a time and take advantage of the opportunities that come up. Because,
exactly.
You know, because you just can't plan on those opportunities. And when they happen.
Like, that's what we started this conversation. I really thought that I was going to do what John Mayer has done, you know, and because that's kind of what was presented to me. It was like, oh, cool. Hey, kid, here's a record deal. You're going to make an album a year. You're going to get on the radio and you're going to tour. And I kind of was like, really had my heart set on that. And little did I know that there was only going to be one John Mayer. And then 10 years later, there's going to be one more, Ed Sheeran. And it's not like there are 100 guys that are able to do that. You just have to be flexible and see which, you're like a pinball in a machine at times, you know, and that's part of the fun of it, you know, but you have to. Someone said to me, like, at one point when I was a little bit more anxious about that kind of stuff, they said, you're going to have to become comfortable and to embrace the unknown.
Right.
And I've gotten to that point, which is really, really nice.
Well, and as you get older, you start to realize, I take it as it comes, and I can't be too concerned about what everyone else thinks of what I'm doing or what direction I'm going.
Right.
It has to be stuff I'm happy with. I have,
right.
You know, that's the main goal, is to be.
Yeah.
You have to be happy with yourself.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Yeah, that's right. Simple as that.
As selfish as that sounds, you have to be happy with yourself.
That's right.
You are your number one priority. That's all there is to it.
That's right.
So if people want to follow you, find out where you're going to be, what you're doing, if you're performing, where can they find you?
Yeah, well, I have a website, which is just my name, kylereapko.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff. I'm not like the best tweeter in the world, but I have it. And when there's news, it's on there. So you can find me online.
Well, and I will put a link to your website on the radio show page, as well as links to Ghostlight Records, where people can purchase not only your brand new CD, which is Richard Rodgers Reimagined, but also the London cast recording for Close to You, the Burt Bacharach Show, which is spectacular. Both of them are great.
Thank you.
I highly recommend the new one as a wonderful holiday gift for people.
Thank you.
Not only, you can actually buy it for your grandparents, and they will
true.
Love it. They will know all the songs.
That is true.
Anyway, Kyle, it's been terrific having you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And we will hopefully talk again soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye. it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. All the cattle are standing like statues. All the cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eye. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful.
Beautiful day.